This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset, your source for news, politics, and more. Many Illinois residents are and have been receiving quote-unquote newspapers in the mail ahead of the election. They look real enough. It's that newsprint paper. There's a name, columns, and headlines, but they're actually right-wing campaign mailers. Here now with more on these fake newspapers is Dan Mihalopoulos, government and politics reporter for WBEZ. And on the line is David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR. Dan, these papers, if we can call them that, they've been showing up in people's mailboxes for months now. Have you received one before?
We have indeed received these newspapers many, many times in the Mihalopoulos Nichols household.
You've got one right here.
I've got one right here with me, North Cook News, from the week of October 3rd to 8th, which informs us that the Pritzker family and Lurie Children's Hospital are promoting, quote, gender and sex development experiments in Illinois.
What did you think when you first read that?
Well, look, these have been around for a while. They crop back up at election time. It's campaign season. And being a member of the government and politics team at WBZ, I am aware of where the money is coming from and who's behind this. It's essentially a campaign mailer masquerading as a local newspaper. On the back page, there are photos of some of the fine student athletes in your neighborhood as well. So they're trying to make it look like a newspaper like the Daily Herald, when in fact it's one-sided. Now, these guys would argue, the people producing it, the Republicans who are producing it, would argue that they feel that mainstream media is too far to the left, and they're countering that. You know, the difference is pretty simple, though. You know, you have misinformation here, but this is just opinion, you know, and that's fine. It's a free country, but at the same time, just mark it for what it is and just send a mailer.
Yeah. Well, we've got some company, Dan. Joining us now on the line is David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR. Welcome to Reset, David.
Hey, Sasha. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so you recently wrote an article about these fake newspapers, which, I mean, I'm looking at it now. It looks pretty real. Are there names, David, that people can look out for?
Yeah, names as in bylines or names as in, you know, targets is going to be Governor Pritzker, right?
Yeah.
But you see on a lot of these papers, they'll have maybe one or two names on a bunch of articles. I've got some here in my home studio now. And they belong to people that I can't track down. Doesn't mean they don't exist. I want to be clear. But, you know, the one that I found and pulled out is named Lori A. Lubert. And I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. This same name was on a byline and was belonging to a reporter who actually existed, who wrote for the Virginian Pilot in Norfolk about 15 years ago and prior to that. And then she left the paper and... Now she's written for, let's see, this one is in the Chicago City Wire, but it's also in a bunch of other newspapers throughout the country that I wrote about. Illinois is sort of the seeding ground for this. It's got, call it 30 outlets, of which, you know, maybe a dozen or so are sent in printed form to people's homes in the moment of high election season.
Yeah.
But there are really about 1,200 of these nationally. And her name appeared in publications in North Carolina, publications in New Mexico, in Maine, you know, all over the place.
Wow.
And these are not, as Dan was indicating, not what you would think normal news articles would look like.
Yeah. And some of the titles circulating here in the state, Chicago City Wire, DuPage Policy Journal, Sangamon Sun, the South Cook News. What did you have there, Dan? North Cook News,
correct.
West Cook News, et cetera. These mailers, Dan, they're targeting specific demographic groups, right?
Right. I mean, you have a couple different things that are going on in this election here. You have a target that is swing voters. So they're trying to emphasize crime and trying to emphasize the message of the Republican candidate for governor, which is that the crime that we see in parts of Chicago is going to spread to your suburb or to your rural area of downstate Illinois. The other message that they're sending in areas where there are more black voters is that the Democrats have failed you. And that's of a piece with some of these ads we've seen with the former, you know, retired TV reporter Charles Thomas, who has sort of argued the same point that what have the Democrats done for us lately? We might as well throw in with Darren Bailey, and he's endorsed Darren Bailey.
I mean, Dan, is this messaging working?
Yeah, I think to some extent it is. I certainly have had people come up to me and say, you know, hey, I heard that the Safety Act, which is the criminal justice reform bill that goes into effect in the new year, that that'll empty the prisons and that there'll be no bail, that they won't be able to hold people who are murderers. And it's just not true, but it's something that we've seen in these newspapers, quote unquote. We've seen them in some of the campaign ads from the same group of people. They have a PAC. And let's name names. It's Dan Proft, who is a radio host on another station that doesn't subscribe to ratings. So we don't really know how many people listen to him. You know, it's the same bunch of people that put out some newspapers a few years ago that also had fake bylines or had people producing, quote unquote, local content from as far away as the Philippines or from other states. So, you know, to the point that David made, you know, you have reporters that how could they possibly be experts? I mean, we have a hard enough time covering one state and one city. And, you know, you've got these reporters that suddenly are experts and are able to do stories in a variety of states at the same time.
Yeah.
But this is not real reporting. They're not actually going out and trying to find out something that they don't want to say in the first place.
Yeah. David, talk more about that, because I'm really wondering if people are actually reading these and they're actually believing what is printed.
You know, it's very tough to measure, and I think that it's most likely to reach the kinds of folks who had historically for decades turned to local printed newspapers for news and found, particularly outside of, you know, Chicago itself, those newspapers greatly diminished in scope, ambition. Sometimes in the days of the week they're published. Sometimes they're not published at all. Some have gone out of business.
Yeah.
And so this may be a familiar thing to them. This isn't particularly fancy layout. It's not particularly glitzy, but it's got color photos and big headlines and charts and, you know, other kinds of things that look an awful lot like a local newspaper, and people can pick that up. I think you're probably, not necessarily exclusively, but probably talking about older white readers. And if you look at the concerns being presented there, they are hot button Republican issues that are, you know, expertly tailored to play upon the concerns of people who are seeing society change perhaps more rapidly than they might like.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the erosion of local news is even as trust in local news remains higher than trust in national news, interestingly. The erosion of local news has provided an opportunity for these simulacrums to show up there. But no, these aren't things that are actually really reporting on local news. And it's it's part of an ecosystem. You mentioned Dan Proft, right? So he's a local radio show host, although I don't think he anymore lives in Chicago, if my memory serves me on that.
Correct. He's as far as we know, he's a Florida man.
He lives in Florida. Yeah. He's now a Florida man. He, you know, is obviously a former Republican candidate for governor who himself has become a major player in state politics by running People Who Play by the Rules Political Action Committee, which is funneled by, you know, tens of millions of dollars from the family of this, you know, cardboard shipping magnate, empire. And what you see is that the newspapers often quote Proft, who then will cite the newspapers on his radio show and then will use the money from his PAC to help promote the candidates who he's interviewing on his show and he's promoting in Illinois, but also who he's promoting through the subsidies he's offering the newspapers themselves. So it's kind of created this rather effective closed ecosystem of news. And while perhaps no one touch might lead somebody to say, well, that's obviously true and I'm going to believe it like that, you know, you're having a relentlessness for people who are seeing it reinforced through advertisements, through the radio show, through the fake newspapers, what have you, that, you know, it certainly accretes. At certain point, certain things that have been reasserted time and again take on a pattern of credibility.
There's an article in the Sun-Times today about that same group, the people who play by the rules pack, which is also behind the yellow flyers that are showing up on the south and west sides of Chicago. One of them reads, "Pritzker lying, black kids are dying." Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's what we were talking about before, that they are trying to undermine the historically very high support for Democratic candidates among black voters in Illinois. Black voters really obviously are the one of the most important bases for the Democratic Party in Illinois, together with progressives of various races and ethnicities. And so it's been one of their big efforts to try to undermine that, because, you know, you really can't get elected governor in Illinois with just all the downstate areas, which are sparsely populated. You need the swing voters who are they're trying to get to with fears of crime and transphobia. And then you have the black voters that they're trying to get to by saying, you know, that the Democrats have not done enough for you. So give the Republicans a try. And, you know, as David mentioned earlier, the money for all this is coming from a family, the Ulines. They moved their company up to Wisconsin. The headquarters is right across the state line as mm-hmm. you're driving to Milwaukee. Uline, there's boxes from them around this newsroom, as well as almost any workplace in the country. They've been very, very successful, and they've put a lot of their money. They're the number one donors to Republican causes around the country. I think they still live in the North Shore in Lake Forest. But a lot of that money to Republican candidates has gone particularly to the sorts of candidates who are into election denialism. Mm-hmm. And we reported last year that the same people who are funding these newspapers also funded a lot of groups that organized the January 6th, 2021 rally that devolved into the insurrection.
Mm-hmm. David, as we said, a number of these stories featured in the mailers. They slam Governor Pritzker for all sorts of things. How has his team responded?
Well, I talked to a spokeswoman for his campaign who says this is propaganda, but often outright lies. And they say, you know, it's outrageous to, you know, make your case, campaign against us, but it's outrageous to deceive readers into thinking they're getting an independent voice as opposed to something that's very much part of the campaign itself. And, you know, a few years back, when this was first coming up, I believe there was a campaign complaint filed about this and ultimately dismissed. But Proft had to sort of change a little bit the way in which the ownership was structured and the way in which these were presented as mm-hmm. to whether or not they were backed directly by the PAC or not. But, you know, these are effectively clearly coinciding with campaign efforts, and the Pritzker people are aware of that. Now, Pritzker himself is an extraordinarily wealthy man who's willing to spend on his own campaign. He's mm-hmm. in a Democratic state, and he looks set to win re-election, although, you know, that's always in the hands of the voters themselves. But that doesn't mean that this is a fair way to operate, and it's, you know, it's corrosive for the campaign, but, you know, as a guy who covers media, I think it's more corrosive for the media climate that we're in. That is, it is at once attempting to discredit explicitly what you read in other outlets. Mm-hmm. And by being kind of corrupt at its core itself, even if people get that this particular publication they received in the mail is not what it appears to be, that rubs off on other publications too. It tells them to have less trust than they might otherwise be able to have for, you know, the Chicago Sun-Times or for the, you know, the paper in Springfield or other publications that are doing their best with whatever resources they have. And so this both degrades those that the fake papers attack, but, you know, degrades the very notion that their media outlets one can trust itself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the hypocrisy of this at core is that they're telling you we have to produce these newspapers because the mainstream media is too far to the left. But if you look at these newspapers, you will only see bad things about one party. If you listen to our stories on the NPR member station here, if you read the newspapers in Chicago or downstate, you will see stuff that is unflattering to both parties.
Right.
And that's what my advice to people is, if you see that it's all one way, you can know that it's not real news. And, you know, I'm flattered that you included me and David at the beginning of the segment as real reporters. But what we do is we try to go out there and find out things that we don't know already, things that may or may not fit preconceived notions of ourselves or of certain groups. And yeah, that's what journalism is at heart. And the hypocrisy, like I said, is that these the profs of the world will tell you that the media is biased, but when, and not to trust the media, but when there's a story that's unflattering about J.B. Pritzker, about Mike Madigan, they will be pointing their audience to those stories. And in fact, they don't do reporting of their own, so they wouldn't know about these things. Everything that Dan Proft and them know about the corruption scandals in the last few years in Springfield,
yeah,
they know because it's been reported by us, by the newspapers. And that's what we remain dedicated to doing.
Yeah. And David, you talked with Bernie Schoenberg for your story, who's a former columnist for the State Journal Register in Springfield. He was one of the state's top political journalists for decades. What were his thoughts on this?
You know, he had actually picked up on this back when the first couple of papers arose in Illinois off what was called a kind of a political institute that was kind of hatching ground for Republican ideas and talking points and the like for the state. And he just said, you know, people are right. He you know, has worked in Springfield for many, many years. And so the Sangamon Sun started appearing around town. And he said, you know, these are people that have never been heard of.
Yeah.
You know, they only have a couple of bylines in them. Many of the stories don't have bylines at all, perhaps most. But he said, you know, nobody in Sangamon County has heard of an actual reporter going knocking on doors, showing up at meetings, asking a question of a public official, whether mm-hmm. positive or negative. Like, these people don't know anything about our community and they're not reflecting it. And he looked at the stories, whether they were the, you know, highest selling homes in the county, or the they would publish lists of public officials' salaries. And, you know, what you notice and is very evident is they're taking stuff that can be scraped off publicly available statistical records, and scraping it, probably using bots of certain kinds to accumulate the information and slot it into kind of something approximating a newspaper form and lightly touched up by a person.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it. One of the things that I saw in the Sangamon Sun was astonishing. We used the photograph of a young man. Young man as a high school athlete in the county, actually for Springfield High School. And they did a story every week about his national ranking. Now, I've got to pull up the story to remember what his high school ranking was, but it was in the many of thousands nationally. And it fluctuated from week to week, maybe between 20 and 80.
Yeah.
And it meant nothing. They weren't saying anything about the young man as a young man. They weren't telling you something that was useful. He was – the most recent rating I found for him was 7,379th for boys under 18. These are not usually the levels of tennis rankings at which you track these things in a way for readers. But it was a fact that they could determine from a publicly available site, scrape it into a story, use a quote that was 3 years old from an essay that a tennis pro had posted in an online publication about tennis in New York,
yeah,
and use the same quote week after week to present this. Now, the amazing thing to me was that on at least two of the weeks, they presented it with a photograph of a boy who looked to be no older than 9 or 10 holding a tennis racket. That boy was white. The actual athlete, whose name is David Liu, is a high school teenager and is an Asian American, nothing like this kid.
My gosh!
So, like, it was
just meshing together information, and to the point where it's just it's literally fake.
It's a Potemkin newspaper.
Well,
it's meaningless. A facade.
It's meaningless. Last word to you, Dan, because we're just about out of time here. Your thoughts on just the state of local news in Illinois at this point?
Well, there are fewer and fewer of us than there were when I started out as a reporter in Chicago in the late 90s, and when I worked as an intern next to Bernie Schoenberg down in Springfield one summer in downstate very long ago. And but the ones that remain, we are trying to find out the things that are important to all of you out there. I mean it in the most sincere and earnest way. And last week, We reported on a story where we went down to Joliet with two lawyers paid for by the station to unseal the divorce of a Democratic leader in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And there was very unflattering stuff about him. And do you want people doing reporting? Please continue to support that kind of reporting. But I do understand people have come up to me and said, well, I saw this stuff on Facebook. I know I shouldn't believe everything on Facebook, but this was a legit news outlet.
Yeah.
And I traced it back to one of these websites in another part of the state. And so, like David said, it's an ecosystem where this starts to bounce around and it ends up everywhere and blurs the line between, political messaging and independent journalism.
Dan Mihalopoulos is a government and politics reporter for WBEZ, and David Folkenflik is a media correspondent for NPR. Thank you both. Whether it's fake newspapers in your mailbox or misinformation online, sometimes it's hard to separate fact from fiction, which is why having media literacy is so important. With us to discuss more is Michelle Chula Lipkin, Executive Director of the National Association for Media Literacy Education, or NAMLE. And Alex Mahadevan, director of MediaWise, a nonprofit that's run by the Poynter Institute. So first of all, I want to get your thoughts on what's happening here in Illinois. You first, Michelle.
Great. Yeah. And I'm happy to be here with Alex. We're close partners. So we're always excited to talk about this topic together. I think what we're seeing is not surprising. Let's be honest. This type of tactic is very as old as news is, right? Mm-hmm. This is not new tactics. And I think what we're just seeing is what you said right at the intro, which is the importance of educating people to be able to assess the information that comes at them, whether it's in their mailbox or on their social media feeds. I think that, what we have right now is a 24/7 minute by minute information ecosystem. We're constantly being bombarded by information and by media messages, and we need to be prepared with the questions that we need to ask. And I think that, media literacy is really frontline in our defense against misinformation and false news. And so the more that we can equip people with the questions that they need to ask and the skills they need, mm-hmm. It will help them whether they receive something false or misleading in the mail or whether they'll see it on their Facebook feeds, right? So Alex can talk a lot about the very specific skills people need. But I think what we're really seeing is just a different tactic that we need to just be aware of. We always need to be on our toes with the information that comes to us.
Sure. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's really insidious about this is that they're kind of targeting people where they'll be off guard. I think the last 5 years, at least myself and others in the media literacy field, we've been so focused on fighting misinformation online, on social platforms. So I think people are getting better at putting their guard up when they see things on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or what have you. But if they're looking at a hard newspaper that lands in their driveway, that is a tough thing for us. So yeah. Media literacy really goes, and what we do is try to teach it so it goes really beyond platform, beyond wherever you find your information. So somebody can pick up a newspaper and think more critically about who sent it to them, about who's behind each of the news articles, mm-hmm. about, the content itself.
Right. Well, I mean, do we know, Alex, if sharing mailers that look like newspapers, if that's allowed?
I don't know about the specific legality of it, but it is something that it freaks me out. I mean, my parents have received the Epoch Times quite a bit, and they call me and say, "Hey, Alex, I just got this newspaper. What's the deal with it?"
Yeah.
So I have to go on to Google.
You're
and
the fact checker.
The name. And go to Wikipedia, check out more about it. So
yeah.
It's really across the U.S. we're seeing this.
Well, Michelle, we might not be sure whether they're allowed, but they're certainly harmful, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, mis and disinformation is meant to confuse, to create chaos, to build divisiveness, right, in society. And we've seen we've seen really, really real world examples and dangerous examples, right? So another reason why we really have to be on our toes. But I do think that in researching what's going on specifically in Chicago, it does seem that there's really some very clear red flags on these publications around not having information about who funds the paper, you know, where the information is coming from, lack of bylines. There's some really, really clear red flags that would pop up in my mind, and that's where the education comes in. And I do think that, you know, Alex made a really good point that we're kind of getting people used to how they need to think about online mis- and disinformation. So this is a really interesting tactic that these groups are using. But I think that, you know, we live in a time where, you know, we have such technology available at our fingertips that anyone can make a newspaper, right?
Right, apparently.
Anyone could. We were talking about cheap fakes and deep fakes. The level of technology is really, really advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be ready for it, right? So we just can't make assumptions about any information. I can't stress that enough. We have to be willing to kind of understand where information comes from, you know, who is creating the information, who's funding the information, and the red flags in some of this information about how, like, skewed the information is,
right.
How they might be, like, trying to get us to feel really strong emotions. Those are really basic, to be honest, red flags that we need to be thinking about.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Another red flag being the fact that we end up seeing these typically during election season, right, Alex?
Yeah. I mean, I think now more than ever, you need to be on guard for this type of thing. Yeah, like on Facebook, but on, you know, in mailers that come to you, because right now is when the disinformers really hit the ground running, whether they be, you know, political action committees or, you know, vested interests. This is the time now where they know they can catch you at your most emotional stake. You're seeing polls, you're seeing get out the vote efforts. Like, now it just seems like everything is at sort of a fever pitch in this week leading up to the election. So now is the time when they can hit you with something that is really, really provocative. So something, you know, this massive splashed headline that says defund the police coming to a city near you, mm-hmm. or CRT in your schools, you know, so those are red flags there. Like, if you see something that really freaks you out or especially angers you, then you might be looking at something that's not the whole story, that is a little bit misleading. So, you know, I would say for folks, when you look at these mailers, if you get angry, then that's a cue to stop and fire up Google and type in the name of the person who allegedly wrote this article, or the name, you know, West Cook News, or
right.
Or this political action committee. You can find out a lot of information by just opening a few tabs, putting in a few keywords, and doing a little bit more research, being a little bit more active about that information you consume.
Yeah, really interesting to think about of this as catching people at emotionally vulnerable points, right? Who do you think, Alex, are the real targets of efforts like this?
Well, my parents. I mean, I older adults.
Yeah.
I think, you know, at MediaWise, we do a lot of work with AARP because we know that older adults are the most civically engaged. They have the most disposable income, so obviously they're always targeted with scams. But they have a vested interest in making the country a better place. They're the ones who actually go out and vote. And also, you know, we have a loneliness pandemic as well. And so this is a demographic of folks who are looking to connect. They are looking to, you know, to feel a part of something. So I think they're at this particular vulnerable state, and especially around elections when they, you know, I think older folks, while they are, you know, mailing in ballots more, they're also the ones who are actually going out. So they're the ones who are reading the mailers right now and maybe or maybe not deciding in this week leading up who they're going to vote for. So definitely older adults.
Michelle, do you think that this has any ties to the decrease of local media, especially newspapers?
Well, I think certainly the decrease in local media has been incredibly detrimental to democracy. Let's just put it out there. That's not an exaggeration, right? Because people are not getting their local news. They're not getting the information that truly pertains to them and their lives on a daily basis. And that's going to clearly impact the way they vote, the way they live, the way they relate to their neighbors and their communities. It's hugely dangerous for the state of our democracy to see what's happening with local news. I think it's a really good question, because I do think they're related, especially because, and this might be one of the kind of insidiousness of this tactic, mm-hmm. is that people are probably excited to think that they're getting news from home, right? Like, right. It's almost like they're getting, oh, wow, this is a paper
local
for me. Yeah,
exactly.
This is a paper for me. And especially, as Alex said, the older people who might not even be on social media. And this is really, and they have grown up in a world where if it's in print, they believe it, right? So I do think that their disinformation tactics are very advanced and they're very strategic. So we have to recognize that strategy. And I think you're right. I think they're using the lack of local news mm-hmm. to get people to pay attention to what they're trying to present as local news.
Yeah,
so it's totally related.
Yeah, for the sake of what they're trying to accomplish, do you think it's smart, Michelle, that they made their mailer look like a normal newspaper?
I think it's creative. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, like, you know, it's interesting. It's like people, what we have to recognize is those that are trying to spread disinformation, their intent is very clear. And we know that they're good at it, right? They get it out there. They dupe people. There has been a lot of lessons in how to do this effectively, which is why we need to counter it so consistently. And we're not doing a good enough job doing that. And we just need to, I don't know what else to say, except whenever you pick up something, you have to ask some basic questions about agenda and about intention of the piece that you're reading. You know, it's really not even enough to just distinguish between fact and fiction, right? We have to really understand things in a deeper way.
So, Alex, what is MediaWise doing right now to educate more people about media literacy?
So we have programs aimed at teens, college students, older adults, Spanish speakers. And we approach it in different ways for different demographics, because disinformation reaches people in different ways. It affects them in different ways. So, for example, for older adults, we have a text message course called Find Facts Fast that you can sign up for. And every day you get a text message right to your mobile phone with a quick media literacy lesson, maybe teach you how to do a reverse image search, and you can be on your way. Joan London actually is featured in that. So for older adults there.
Oh, wow.
And then, For our teens, we partnered with PBS NewsHour Student Reporting Labs to create lessons for teachers based on our teen fact-checking network. So we have a network of teenagers who literally find claims on their social feeds on TikTok. They fact-check it themselves. They shoot a video and they put it out in the world, and they are their own little fact-checkers. Now teachers can go to PBS and download our fact checks as a lesson.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's mainly meeting people where they are, and where disinformation reaches them is our main goal.
That all sounds great. Michelle, what about Namely?
So I want to mention some really important, exciting work that we're doing with the National Association of State Election Directors. These are the folks that are really on the front lines of disinformation about elections. They're the incredible Americans that are rolling up their sleeves and running our elections day in and day out. And we created a toolkit for our election officials on how to kind of navigate their constituents who believe disinformation. But we also created tip sheets about navigating disinformation and things to think about, like, what do I need to think about when you see images and videos about election online? How do I protect myself from false information about elections? Mm-hmm. What questions should you ask? So these tip sheets are available on NASA.org. They're available to download, and they're really, really great information, especially at this really key time where disinformation is running rampant.
Yeah, and this year, Illinois actually became the first state to pass legislation requiring every public high school to incorporate a curriculum around media literacy, which is also good information there. Michelle Chula-Lipkin is the executive director of National Association of Media Literacy Education. And Alex Mahadevan is the director of MediaWise, a nonprofit run by the Poynter Institute. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This episode of Reset was produced by Micah Yasin. It was edited by Ethan Schwab. Enjoy having a quality news source anytime you like? Then consider subscribing to our podcast and get us in your feed each day of the work week. And when you subscribe, leave us a rating. That helps more people find us and supports the work that we do. That's it for Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk tomorrow.